Hey, Whiskey Ringers, welcome to a brand new intro. First off, there are still a few bottles of our barrel, single barrel rye, finished in Armagnac casks, picked in partnership with This Is My Bourbon podcast. Check out the show notes for links to purchase. Second, I am thrilled to announce that I've joined the Bar Cart Co-op. This group of podcasts and shows has a show or multiple for everyone. I'll talk more about them in the mid-roll. Finally, there are still two $25 spots available on Patreon. These are the last two spots that will ever be open on that tier, so if you've been putting it off, grab your spot today. There are also spots available at the $15 a month level if you want to support, but can't quite commit to that $25 tier just yet. There's a spot in supporting for everyone's budget, and I truly thank you all for making this podcast possible. Hey, folks, welcome to a new episode of the Whiskey Ring Podcast. This week, we're talking to Filmland Spirits, and to join me on the podcast today, I'm thrilled to welcome on Troy Blotnick and Charlie Flint. Troy and Charlie, welcome on.
Thanks for having us, David.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So I met, I met definitely you at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival. Charlie, I don't know if I met you at the festival.
I was there. I don't know. There were a lot of people and there was a lot of whiskey, so I don't know.
Yeah, I heard you guys say on one of the podcasts that I was listening to that you may have poured 5,000 pours during those 3 days or so. So
yeah.
I can believe it, but I only remember Troy just because I spent a little bit of FaceTime with him, so it was more one-on-one. But in any case, let's say I met you both at the Kentucky Bourbon Festival in 2023, and it was you kind of stood out in particular. You're situated in the, I guess, the craft section is what they put anyone who's not a heritage distiller in last year, and in some ways, yeah, it's craft, but it's more non-distilling producing. And I guess what I'm getting at, just to start off and give us a little context, is that for you guys, it is about the liquid, but it's also about all that context that you give to the liquid. So for those who may have not heard of you, let's just hear the elevator pitch. What is Filmland Spirits?
Sure. So we are an LA-based company, but we do all of our work in Kentucky. So we age, blend, and bottle all there. Charlie and I, a million years ago, were screenwriters. And so we combined our passions together for movies and bourbon to create Filmland Spirits. And what we do is we start by creating an original movie script for every one of our products. And then we create a poster for that script in the very like mid-20th century pulp art style. And that poster becomes the label. And it includes, like, on the side of the label, the synopsis of the movie, the characters, their headshots and their bios. There's a QR code you can scan and it'll take you to our website where you can watch a trailer, interactive storyboards, download movie posters, script pages, that kind of thing. The other side of the label is all about the award-winning liquid that's in the bottle. So who we are, what it tastes like, and then we jam as much transparency onto that label in this little credit block that we have. So not just where it's bottled and distilled, but we got the mash bill on there right down to the char of the barrel in which it was aged. And so our packaging is, you know, all about a story. There are characters, there's in-depth, you know, plots and all of that going on. But of course, and I think you just said it a second ago, nothing is more important than the liquid, right? I always say what's inside the bottle has to be as amazing as what's on the bottle. And so we are very focused on making high quality products. To that end, all of our original products that we've put out on the market that we've submitted for awards have won double gold or gold at the San Francisco World Spirits Competition, as well as gold medals at other competitions as well.
And before you started Filmland, so Filmland was founded in 2020, but you started production in September, well, not production, I should say you started being able to sell bottles September of 22. What whiskeys, bourbon or otherwise, did you two drink?
I gonna go first here? Gosh, a lot. So Troy and I are both big whiskey nerds, and both had and still have pretty big collections. So it's been a long time since I've counted, but I have friends that have much bigger collections, but somewhere in the like 300s. And so, you know, good whiskey is like a good movie, you know, depends on the day of the week and the mood and, you know, the weather and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, some of my favorites, I do love, I love Boone County. Like they make, the classic Boone County as well, sourced Boone County as well as Boone County that they've been producing themselves. I'm trying to think of some others. New Riff does really good. I guess now I'm all up in like Northern Kentucky, almost in Cincinnati. Geographically, I should work my way back down. I don't know. It really kind of depends on the mood, for a cocktail, like just good old fashioned Wild Turkey 101 makes a pretty good old fashioned. So it kind of just depends on, I know it's a cop out answer, but because, there's the what do I reach for a special occasion versus what do I reach for, like day to day. I'm trying to think, the last thing that I poured was Anita's Church, actually. Troy, I ended up buying a bottle of that Anita's Church from Burnt. I think it's called Anita's Choice by Burnt Church, which is a small distillery out of South Carolina. I've been traveling and I saw it and was very intrigued. So I was like, all right, well, I got to get a bottle of this and give it a shot. It's not bad at all. So I don't know. Cop out answer is it depends. A little bit of everything. But as collections go, like I collected early like Boone County juice hard. I spent way too much money on like 10, 12, 14, 15-year-old like Boone County, NDP Boone County early on in my collecting days. And those are the ones that I kind of find myself going back to. All right, Troy, back to you.
Well, Charlie and I have known each other for 30 years and been close friends. So we're going to have some similar answers on things. People usually ask if we're related, if we're brothers. And we've been drinking together for a long time also. So we've developed a lot of mutual taste. But because Charlie lives in Atlanta and I live in California, we have access to different stuff. We do meet in Kentucky at least once a year, if not more. And that's really where Filmline came from, is we started meeting in Kentucky for our annual pilgrimage and going to distilleries like crazy people, like five or six distilleries in a day, which is not easy to do. It requires a lot of planning.
A lot of logistical planning.
Yeah, especially now that it's become so popular. And back then you didn't even have to book. When we started, you didn't have to book a time. You could just show up at the distillery and get a tour, that kind of thing. But it still t takes a lot of planning. So we've developed a lot of taste together. I mean, when I first started drinking bourbon, I think I probably started with Woodford. Like the first old fashioned I can remember having was made with Woodford. So I've always been a fan of Woodford. I like what they're doing. Same as Charlie, Wild Turkey 101 is the go-to for cocktails for old fashions these days. But I also have a large collection, around 300 bottles or so, and have spent too much money, as Charlie said, on a lot of different interesting things. I got some tried and trues. I love Elmer. I've always loved Elmer. It's one of my favorites. I don't get to drink it very often, but I do love it. And then lately, I've just been trying out different distilleries. I'm like totally obsessed with Frey Ranch, which is a distillery, a grain to glass distillery out of Nevada. I've never met them. I keep meaning to call them and introduce myself and say hello, but love their bottles, love their closure, love their juice. They got a bottled and bond rye that they put out that is just fantastic. And so, big fan of that right now.
So you both give me ideas because I had never heard of Burnt Church before. So I don't, the Carolinas and kind of the Low Country is an area where you don't have a lot of distilleries, I think, or certainly not ones that are well known. So I'm going to look them up. And then Troy, to the Frey Ranch point too. Frey Ranch, so they've been a guest on the podcast before, and that bottled and bond rye was one of my favorites of last year. Is I love black licorice and those really heavy ryes, and they definitely have it. So yeah, if you want to give them a call, I'll also give you a shout out to introduce you guys to. They're pretty responsive too.
Great.
But yeah, they were great guests. But no, I had heard about the kind of the whiskey the pilgrimage each year it's called, and I did that once, I guess maybe one and a half times. And yeah, I kept thinking to myself, man, five or six in a day. Like I thought I was pushing myself to do maybe three in a day. And like you said, like by the time I was doing it, you had to book in advance every single tour, and not every distillery is right next to each other. Some of them are. Heaven Hill and Willett right next to each other and ones like that. And the ones in Louisville obviously are all on Main Street. But for the most part, like you gotta drive, you gotta taste, you gotta, and just imagine by the end of the day, you guys must be just dead tired.
It's work. It was a lot. I mean, it still is. It's a lot of work, and it's like we were saying, planned ahead. We're maniacs, right? So we would have a spreadsheet every year, and now it's got like 10 tabs on it or whatever. You're planning out each day because this went on for multiple days, and we hardly ever ate. So we'd pack like protein bars because you don't have time to even eat. So you just run from one distillery to the next, and like you said, frequently you're driving between them. Quickly eat a protein bar or whatever, and then on to the next one. And yeah, it evolved to the point where like that some of our, or at least some of my favorites, I can't speak for us both, but like there was some we, like especially the smaller ones, we'd be like, you guys need a hand? And a small distillery is always going to be like, hell yeah, if you guys want to haul bags of grain, like come on. And that's kind of where the, like going beyond just, like sampling and all of that and starting to get interested in production came from sitting with some of those guys will sit and they'll, like they'll entertain you as long as you're willing to hang around and you learn so much. And yeah, we literally spent, like we're, mashing and hauling grains and cleaning up and all, bottling and all that kind of stuff. And it all just kind of fed into the passion that ultimately led to us doing it ourselves. Yeah.
And I should say, before moving forward from that, would you say that your both your palates align to more American whiskeys as opposed to, let's say, malt whiskeys or scotches and such?
Yes.
Yeah, both of us, I think. I in the collection of hundreds, I have a couple of scotches, and I think maybe Troy may have more than me. And I have some I like Japanese whiskey, some Japanese whiskeys as well. But yeah, it's like 98% American whiskey. Yeah.
Yeah, same. I like Japanese whiskey as well. I told you we have a lot of the same taste. There are certain scotches I like. There's a lot of scotch that I don't prefer, but I actually also like Irish whiskey. I've really started developing a taste for that. I love Redbreast. Some of their older ones and some of their finishes are really good.
No, they look no judgment. On other of those, I've got a pretty mixed collection, but like I see more often than not that people kind of gravitate towards one over the other, either an American or a Scotch or an Irish or something. So, but I love asking that question and the question of what you've been drinking because you're producing a spirit now, you're bottling things, and that's, unless it's purely a business thing, that's always going to inform what you're putting in the bottle and what how you're blending. So with that, listen, so we found it in 2020, started selling in 2022. Between those two periods, I mean, this is COVID era, like height of COVID era. How did you get started? Like, was it, and that can be anything from, securing funding and assets to finding barrels and bottles. Like, what was the startup like?
So, prior to starting Filmland, I was doing a stint in corporate as the chief operating officer of a publicly traded sports nutrition company. And I left there. I took like a month to kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. But I had been talking about doing my own whiskey brand with Charlie for a long time. And I just woke up one morning and I said, if I don't do it now, then I'm a liar. Right, because I've been telling everybody I need this, I need the right opportunity where I have a little bit of a ramp, and I left that other job at a little bit of a few months of ramp, and I said I got to do it now. So actually another friend of mine was helping me get it off the ground. So we spent a lot of time, we spent a few months in his backyard because it had to be outdoors because it was COVID, brainstorming. We went on a lot of field trips to distilleries here in Southern California and talked to a lot of distillery owners, and then we would sit down, do a lot of brainstorming, get Charlie on Zoom, that kind of thing. And it really came from that. So my friend is in the entertainment business as well as a bunch of other businesses, and he is also a podcast host. So after a one day after a long session of like banging our heads against the wall trying to come up with a concept, and we knew we wanted bright eye-catching labels, right? That was always sort of from the beginning, because I would always say I'm walking through the liquor stores and the bourbon aisles filled with bottles that are brown and black and beige with pictures of dogs or birds or old men on them, right? And I would always say, why can't bourbon packaging be fun and interesting the way wine and craft beer and rum and vodka is, right, to some degree, and still be really high quality inside? So that was always sort of at the heart of the premise. Anyway, he started viewing me. And I started talking about writing and the movies. And he stopped me and he said, you know, the way you're talking about writing in the movies, that passion, that's the same passion you show about whiskey. Can we do them together? And like Filmland just boom. And some of the concept just came very quickly after that. So that was maybe December of 2020 when that conversation happened. So I spent the month of January and a little bit of February writing the business plan. And then late February, early March of 2021, started raising money. Very quickly, we were able to raise like what we had identified as our minimum threshold for pulling the trigger to get going. So by April, we were getting going, right? We were actually spending money to make develop this and make it happen while I continued to raise money. And I continue to raise money today. That's a big part of my job still. So that's really what happened. And then we might have been able to launch a year sooner than we did. But because of COVID and the supply chain shortages at the time, getting glass was really challenging. Mm-hmm. And so there was, even back then, we said, oh, well, maybe we'll use a stock bottle. There was no such thing as a stock bottle. There was a stock design, but there was nothing in stock, right? So a stock bottle was going to take us 10 to 12 months to get, and a custom bottle was going to take us 10 to 12 months. So, and we always wanted a custom bottle. So we said, you know, we're just going to have to delay the launch for a year, which we did. And that's why we launched, but it's okay because we had so much to do. And when we launched, we were so buttoned down and so prepared with everything that we had the time to do that. So it was great.
And you alluded to a couple of things here, and I'll include pictures when posting and when talking about this. And the bottles themselves are, I can only say they are heavily detailed. You know, we've got a stopper that it's evocative of a film reel and canister. The bottom, I think, I forget the term. It was the
kinetoscope.
Kinetoscope. Thank you. Yes, with the, was it a horse going through it, right?
First time? It was the original Edison kinetoscope where he had the horse running in a circle. It was like technically the first moving picture kind of thing.
Right. Which fits with like bourbon is usually associated with horses too. You're talking the other symbols that are on bottles and the shelves, horses among them too. But I mean, so that's just the label design, just the bottle design with the glass. Mm-hmm. Then you have the label where you're really getting into this full treatment of who are the characters, what's the background, the 50 style of, as you said, B movie, in this case, horror movie, thematics, all the information on there that you can possibly put on there short of saying what distillery it is. I know in this case, it's distilled in Indiana, 75214. So we know where it is, and we're allowed to say where it is.
It's MGP. MGP, sure.
So, but the point being that there, all the information is here. And then add into that, as you said, QR code on here, where you can go look at a trailer, the storyboards, more information about these spirits. So the, oddly enough, the first question that came to me when I was looking at the bottle was, I'm thinking this bottle, Moonlight Mayhem, it's a Kentucky straight bourbon, sorry, Indiana straight bourbon that is at 94 proof and 54.99. And I'm thinking to myself, that is a tremendous amount of back work being done for this bottle. How is it being sold at basically $55 for, and including all of that back end work to make it more than just a bottle, but a true full-on story? So I know that was not really a question, but it is a question of like, how is that possible?
Well, it's pretty much the lowest price we could sell it for and still have it make financial sense. It is our entry point product. So the other four products that we have all come in at, you know, higher SRPs. And remember too, we don't make that money. That's what the retail store sells it for, or they can sell it for whatever they want, but that's our suggested price. We sell it to our distributor for a heck of a lot less than that. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, certain of our products have better margins than other of our products, depending on what we're doing. But we wanted to basically come in at the lowest prices we could come in and have it make sense for us as a business. And so that's why we did that. We tried to get Moonlight Mayhem down to $49.99 because, you know, that $50, that psychological barrier, and that we couldn't pull off, you know, so we came in at $54.99 and that we could do. So.
And look, I'm certainly not complaining about the price point. I think it's great. I just, you know, again, I think about, we've had some other firms on that design labels, that design bottles, people who put a lot of thought into, like Frey Ranch, actually, who put a lot of thought into the design of their bottles and those stoppers in that case that are, you know, you can knock someone out if you threw it. And like those things do add up. They're small costs, but they add up. And so how much of your time is, to both of you, is spent not necessarily on the liquid side, but on the back, on the storyboarding side of things?
Yeah, we collaborate on it. Troy typically has kind of the lead idea, and then we riff on it. Like Troy said earlier, we've been writing partners for a long time, and so we've written together screenplays and teleplays and things like that in the past. And so it's kind of a natural evolution of that, that we collaborate and working on everything you see on the bottle. And everything that's on the bottle at this point was done by the two of us collaborating in some way, shape, or form. It was funny, like maybe been a year ago, but we were at a bar in Louisville. It was in Louisville, right, Troy? And they had our product, and some people, you know, like the bartender was telling some people, and they started challenging us. This guy, it was a lawyer, of course, he grabbed the bottle and pulled it in front of himself, and he started trying to test us. He, you know, he would read like a snippet from the label, and then would be like, now fill in the blank. And we're like, dude, we wrote every word that's on that bottle between the two of us. So we can recite the entire bottle from corner to corner and everything in between. And so yeah. And honestly, at least for me, this is the fun part. Like, you know, the creating is the fun part, right? So there's working on the designs. And actually earlier today, we were working on an idea. Troy came up with a really cool idea and was doing some like storyboarding, and shared it with me, and I was giving him some feedback. So he was in full on creative mode, doing some designs, but, you know, working on that, working on the script, working on the concepts, working on, you know, the label art, super fun. And then what goes inside, blending is always really fun, you know, tasting the different products, finding the right blend, you know, nailing something that we really feel proud and good about, before it goes into the bottle. So at least for me personally, it's a collaboration, although, you know, often Troy has the big idea. Sometimes I'll have the big idea, but at least for our core products, Troy kind of led the way. Like he said, he got kind of the ball rolling early on, you know, with his buddy there in California. But yeah, I don't know, Troy, what are your thoughts?
Well, in terms of how much time we spend on it, it kind of comes in waves. And so there are, when we're in, you know, innovation mode and development mode, we can spend, you know, I can spend 12 hours a day working on it and bugging Charlie through most of that, or forcing him to sit and meet with me and go through a million things, and, you know, or basically just emailing him and going, I'm too tired, you write this, right? You take the first pass at this, and then I'll give you notes. So it'll come in waves. And then, you know, when we're not in that mode, you know, I'll be spending 12 hours a day working on fundraising or marketing, or, you know, Charlie and myself and one of our other partners, Steve Canepa, we do all the blending ourselves. So we taste every barrel we own at some point or another. We try and taste them every year to year and a half, and then we taste them again before we blend with them. And so we will get together now, it's probably four times a year at least, to blend. And it's increasing, actually. So we'll either, you know, we usually try to meet in Kentucky, although lately it's been more efficient to meet either in Atlanta or California and have the sample sent to us. So we've been doing a little bit of, you know, the test blending in different places. And so we spent, you know, when we're in that mode, we spend a ton of time on that. We'll get together for 4 or 5 days at a time. And basically that's all we do for 4 or 5 days is sit there and taste, you know, because you got to slow down. Our first blending sessions in Kentucky, we went there for 3 days and tasted 50 barrels and did 3 blends in 3 days. And that was intense, right? There are harder ways to make a living, don't get me wrong. But now we try and stretch it out a little bit. So we, you know, we spend the morning doing other stuff and the afternoon blending, then we take a break, you know, that kind of thing. So it's just in waves, but, you know, we're getting ready right now to ramp up two additional products for later in the year and next year. And so we're just re-entering that like heavy duty creative phase, which, as Charlie said, I hit him with some stuff this morning to go through it together.
Yeah, I have a note here to ask you about plans, not only for the KBF in 24 and 25, but releases later this year and in 25 as well. But Troy, you just made me think of two questions. The first one being to both of you, since moving from the consumer side to the production side, and including the blending, I don't think I've ever asked this before. How do you feel that your alcohol tolerance has gone up?
I hate to keep answering everything with a caveat. It for me, it depends, because what I try and do sometimes is, and Charlie knows, is I take breaks. So sometimes I try and take like a month or 2 months, and I've squeaked out once or twice, even 3 months, where I don't drink for that time. It, you know, if I have to blend or I have to taste for business or whatever, obviously I do that, but I try and not, and it helps reset my palate too. Because when usually a blending session will be the first time I'll have had something in a month or 2 months or whatever it is. And so it's definitely reset. So during those times, my tolerance goes way down. And I've been with Charlie even like right after those times. And I'm like, whoa, that just hit me hard because I'm not used to that. Then again, I'm in times where I'm doing it all the time and I'm going out socially or whatever. And yes, my tolerance definitely goes up. But I don't think being in the business has increased it specifically.
Yeah, this Troy talked about how similar we are. This is where we part ways. he goes on these like these, you know, droughts or whatever. I believe drink early, drink often, and so I'm kidding, not quite that bad, but yeah, I've never taken a 3 month pause. So no, I would give the same answer though, in that I don't know that necessarily my tolerance has increased, because, you know, like he said, when we would go, in particular, when we were going to Kentucky, when we blend in Kentucky, we're kind of on the clock because we're at the co-packer with our partners, and, you know, like we're having them pull samples usually in real time, and they're with us, and they're usually participating. We're using their equipment and all of that. And so we feel pressure. And not from them. They're super good guys. It's not like they're yelling at us or anything, but you when you're on the clock, you feel a pressure to move at a faster pace. And we, like he said, we've ended up like tasting a lot in a relatively short period of time, and there's tolerance and, you know, starting to feel a little foggy. And then there's also, you blow your, like long before you get like loopy or anything, what happens, I found, is you blow your palate out. You're like, that's it. You just like it all, you can't get any notes out of anything, you know, like after a certain point. And so, yeah, we did find ourselves having to be like, all right, you know what, we're going to like go to lunch and maybe walk around the block and get some fresh air, because it's all starting to taste the same. So it's probably more that than the, tolerance per se. And it is why in the more recent tasting sessions, like Troy said, we try to break it up, because it, you know, there is the palate, but there's also, our notes get sloppier as the day goes on, if we do like a full day. And so then, you know, months later, you know, like you said, we're tasting a bunch of stuff and we refer back to it and we're like, yummy. Okay, well, that's a real great tasting note, right? Like, where, you know, like that doesn't do me any good. P.S. That was clearly a note done at like 5 p.m. after tasting, you know, 50 barrels or whatever. So we've tried to break it up because yeah, it mostly palate, but you know, you do get a little foggy as the day goes on, if you will.
Hey, fair enough. And the other question I want to ask just before jumping back to the bottle is, Troy, you alluded to starting to get fundraising and that you're still fundraising. And I guess this could be to both of you, Troy, because it's the one who mentioned it. But, you know, what kind of fundraising are you doing? Is it more seed funding, venture funding, smaller investors?
Yeah, we did a seed round that we technically closed at some point last year. And then we went into a Series A round, but all of the investment has come from, I would say, you know, either high net worth individuals or small groups of investors who this is what they do. They're not really venture, but they form, you know, LLCs and then go invest in, you know, bourbon related things. So I wouldn't call them private equity. I wouldn't call them venture capital in the traditional way. They're still high net worth individuals. They've just banded together, but it's really been that. So, you know, our seed funding came mostly from places outside of Kentucky, and our Series A so far, which we're about halfway through, has come largely from inside Kentucky.
Interesting. All right. So with that, jumping back to the bottle, this one that I have in particular is batch number one. That's correct. Make sure of that. Yes. I don't know why I'm scared. Yes. Okay. There we go. MMO1. So yes, batch number one. And the reason I'm calling out the batch number in particular is that you guys like to throw Easter eggs in your labels. But I also read or heard that each time you do a label, you might throw more Easter eggs in there or do tiny little changes. So I'm looking at this and the one that I can see, I'm not as familiar with this, with these movie tropes as you guys are, obviously. So I'm going to miss like half of them or more, but obviously seeing the Hollywood Boulevard, so you can tell it's LA, the werewolf in the back is holding a bottle of Moonlight Mayhem. On there, I feel like there's something about the car that I'm missing, but looks very familiar. But I'm curious, from this batch to, let's say, if someone finds the next batch, what kind of Easter eggs should they be on the hunt for?
So every label that we do has a picture of that bottle on the label, as you pointed out, which, if you think about it, is technically impossible to do. Because how do we finish the label so we can put a picture of it on the label if we haven't finished the label, right? So it gets a little bit tricky. So every bottle will have that. Yes, as we go, it's not really a batch related thing. It's just when we run out of labels and have to print more, we take the time in between to mess with it, right? Because a lot of the labels are pre-printed, that kind of thing. So Moonlight Mayhem, what you have there, has probably the fewest Easter eggs on it of anything, because it was very early on and we just popped like one or two on there.
Moving forward, it makes me feel bad that I didn't miss that many of them. So
yes, there you go. Moving, what's fun is I do a lot of work in the market where I go visit accounts, retail stores, and, you know, work with them to either train them on our product or get them to carry our product. And this comes up, and I've had, you know, buyers and owners of stores put on their reading glasses and sit there and study until they found everyone on the bottle. And it's fun. We don't really talk about what they are because, you know, it's part of the challenge or whatever. It's part of the fun. The only thing I will say is we've definitely started putting characters from one label, hiding them in other labels. So you might, you know, see a Rise of the Robots label and there might be a werewolf hidden somewhere on there, and vice versa.
Gotcha. I like it. And this is more of a testament to, like, you're putting the thought into this and you're seemingly not satisfied when you get to the end of it. Like, you're thinking, okay, we ran out of this label, or we're about to run out of this role. What's another one we can throw in here? So
yeah, it's a combination of, we originally did it just kind of like as a fun thing that we thought was, you know, something we thought was kind of fun. Like Troy said, from the market, we've heard from consumers and stores and distributors, like, people get into it. And so with, you know, as we've redone labels, we've looked for more opportunity to sneak stuff in, you know, again, both for ourselves, but also for the market. In my head, it's almost like when you were a kid, and you were sitting eating cereal and you had the box in front of you, and you would like sit and stare at the box and like look for the fun things on the back of your Cocoa Krispies or whatever. It's almost like that, you know, like we tried to make a label that you can sit and have some fun with. You know, there is the character, you know, the story background and the character bios and all of that. And this just is a smaller extension of that, where, you know, the longer you look at it, maybe the more things you can find.
It's funny what Charlie just said. We say all the time, I always call it the adult cereal box. Right. But remarkably, we sort of came up with that in our minds a long time ago, but I've lost count of the number of times somebody comes up to me and refers to it that way. Right. So obviously it sort of hit a note with them. And what I say all the time is, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We take our liquid really seriously, but when it comes to the label, we're just trying to make ourselves laugh. We're trying to make our customers laugh and be entertained, right? We have a lot of fun with it, And because we don't, we're not like sitting here saying we're making great art. It's part of why we pick B movies, is so we have this wide open pasture to be silly and to have fun and a bit and over the top.
And with that, with, you know, leaning into the B movie side, you're right. It's very wide open. You can go the horror route. You can go sci-fi. You can go, you know, any mix and anything in between from those. And I think, I mean, look, I'm not as versed in these movies as you guys are, as most other people are. I enjoy movies. I'm not a movie buff by any means. So I fully admit that. So when I think of B movies, the first ones I think of are usually like Ed Wood type movies. And mm-hmm. I don't know if that's B or C or D at that point, but probably depends on the person. But yeah, I think too that this just stood out. It stands out on a shelf as well. In that same trip when we was at the KBF, I was staying in Louisville because it was, honestly, if you're visiting there for the KBF, it's so much cheaper to stay in Louisville and drive. But so I visited Justin's House of Bourbon in Louisville as opposed to the one in Lexington. And they had this on the shelf. They had this one, Rise of the Robots. And I think they also had The Town at the End of Tomorrow on there at that time. I don't know if it's still there, but because I think that's almost sold out at this point.
Yeah.
But it stood out on the shelf. And for anyone who hasn't been to Justin's House of Bourbon, they're built on a single barrel model for the most part. There's a couple of, you know, Kentucky only releases, and they have a bottled and bond section now, but most of it is about single barrels and smaller brands that you're not going to find at every liquor barn and Big Red in the area. And when you stand out on shelf, when you're not a horse, a dog, a bird, or something like that, it does catch the eye and it makes people look at it. So when you were, I guess the question I would get to from there is, you guys had the screenwriting experience. You knew you were going to lean into the B movie kind of trope and artistry there. Was there any other inspiration or whatever the opposite of inspiration is that you took from looking at all these bourbon labels for so long and saying, this is really not what we want to put on the label?
I mean, just generally the idea that we wanted it to stand out. We wanted it to be different. We wanted it to feel more like craft beer and wine, like I said, where, you know, and just didn't want to go. There's nothing wrong with the labels that are out there. I always, you know, talk about like the national brands that have been around for 100 or 200 years. They've been branding and packaging in a very traditional way, right? And I love it. I'm Charlie too. We're fans and consumers of all of that stuff. Right. So
we're not an old man, Troy. And that's you just said earlier, that's one of your favorites.
Right. Right. Exactly. and so, you know, we're fans of all that. And I think it's all great. We just set out to do something very different. That's all.
Fair enough. And so getting a little more into the industry itself, I'm always curious when I talk to an NDP for the first time about how you got connected with your suppliers. So, you know, in this case, we know the Indiana is from MGP, both the rye and the bourbon. The Town at the End of Tomorrow is a Kentucky bourbon that we're not allowed to say where it's from, but it is Kentucky.
Yes.
And so as people who are getting into the industry, know the industry from a consumer side, but, you know, don't know the barrel broker phone number necessarily. What was that process like of getting supplies to make these blends?
Sure. So as I mentioned, Charlie and I have been, you know, going to Kentucky for a long time. So the idea of doing a brand started long before 2020. And so it was on one of our trips to Kentucky that we first said we got to do this, but that was probably 2014 or 2013, 2014, somewhere in there. And, you know, Charlie was in Atlanta, I'm in LA, I owned a different company and had a full-time job in a completely different industry. And Charlie has a full-time job and we got kids. And so, you know, we batted around lots of ideas for a bunch of years, but very early on, I just, my personality is just figure it out. And so, I remember a long time ago, I wanted to know how something worked. So I called MGP, I cold called MGP. and said, I'm thinking about starting a brand. How would I get in business with you guys to buy whiskey from you? And they put me in connection with the West Coast sales rep. Great guy. And he spent an hour and a half or 2 hours on the phone with me telling me how it all worked. And then I said, look, you know, one day I'll come buy from you, but you know, I'm really early on this idea. 2 years later, I had another variation idea. So I called him back and picked his brain for a while. And then a year later, did it again. And then probably a year, it was around October or November of 2021, I called him up and said, you remember me? I'm finally ready to buy. And so we purchased barrels directly from MGP at times. At the same time, I did the same thing with distributors. I wanted to know how that side of the business worked. So I just called distributors in California and picked their brain. And they gave me a lot of great ideas. Ironically, one of the distributors I called, I didn't even remember what their name was, but they are now the distributor we're with in California. So, and the guy I talked to vaguely remembers talking to me all those years ago. And I have a notebook filled with notes from that conversation. So it's been that. And then once we got into the business and we brought, you know, Kristen Kilpack is our VP of sales. She's been in the industry over 20 years. She was running sales over at Jefferson's for a while. She's been with Clos du Vall also and Gosling's, very experienced. And Kristen has a tremendous amount of contacts. So she introduced, once she came on board, she introduced us to people. And then it went from there, from, you know, on and on until we sort of got ourselves networked with a lot of different people, largely in Kentucky, who buy and sell barrels, brokers, basically. And so we've developed a lot of great relationships. We have some very, very strong relationships that are actually at this point a strategic advantage for us in terms of access to things that other people might not have access to. Also at very good rates, which is how we're keeping our costs, you know, our SRPs lower, things like that.
And so in this case, you've had thought it out for several years, cold call MGP and then other through other distributors as well, other sources. Now, moving that forward to when you're creating the blends, you've spoken a little bit already about how you go about blending and tasting barrels and all of that. And I'm thinking a line that I've heard you both say in together or in separate interviews is that the liquid is the story and the story is the liquid. And so you have a blend and you have an idea for a movie and a concept and the two match together. And from what I understand, sometimes it's, you know, the liquid comes first and that inspires you. Sometimes you have an idea and you find a liquid that pairs with it. So rather than ask you the question that everyone else has asked you, which was basically about that, instead I'll phrase it this way. Do you have ideas for storylines and such that have not met their liquid match yet and vice versa? Do you have liquid that you have waiting that you haven't figured out a story yet for?
Yes. So sorry for the one word answer. Yes. Yes to both of those. I always say this is sort of morbid, but we have more ideas than we'll ever get to in our lifetime. Right. So we are jam packed with notes and ideas, because every time we're brainstorming something specific, we come up with like 20 other ideas that aren't appropriate, but we got to use that one day. And in fact, Town at the End of Tomorrow, which is that Kentucky Straight 9-year-old bourbon that we released last September, that came from a totally different brainstorming session where we were working on Moonlight Mayhem. And because Moonlight Mayhem originally had a different name and a different horror species that we, for trademark reasons, we decided to move away from. And when we were re-brainstorming, we came up with this. We already had the name Town at the End of Tomorrow, and it was for a totally different product that we will never do. But we didn't have a story behind it. And we came up with that, like, variations on that story during the Moonlight Mayhem brainstorming. And so then, flash forward, whatever, 2 years later, that name had been rattling around in our heads, like just couldn't let go of it. I'm a time travel nerd. I'm a sci-fi nerd. I love Doctor Who. And I want to do a time travel story. And a time travel story has to be, you know, it just has to have aged liquid, right? And that's where the whole thing came about. So we went searching for that aged liquid to match our time travel story. But then we have other liquid that we've acquired because, like I said, we have some really good connections now, and people, I get offered barrels, you know, not daily, but 2-3 times a week, people will email me or text me and say, I've got this. And sometimes they will offer us something that I'm like, I don't know what we're going to do with that from a business standpoint or from a story standpoint, but I know we want that. And so we will buy it and stick it in our, you know, in our warehouse and let it keep aging and that kind of thing. Obviously, we taste it all first before we buy it. But when we know we want it, and so there's some stuff sitting in there that will eventually match to one of the stories we have or come up with a completely new story for it.
I should ask with that. So far, the ones that are out on the market are Indiana and Kentucky. Do you have other states on the lineup?
We have concepts that will include other states. I don't think we have any inventory of barrels we acquired from other states, but we have, I don't know what the right word to say is. We have potential sources for it that are ready for us whenever we are.
I don't know. The reason I think about that is, again, I'm looking at the Moonlight Mayhem bottle. It's obviously very California inspired. It's Hollywood Boulevard. It's in that kind of era. The Rise of the Robots similarly is inspired by a certain thing. And I know those are area, obviously California being the center of filmmaking in America is where a lot of these things are ideated and created. And obviously Charlie, no offense to Atlanta, but I mean, Georgia is getting a ton of that as well. Now a lot of things are being filmed in Atlanta and around Georgia. So these are, you know, you're both located in two epicenters of filming. Now, I'm incredibly biased. I'm from New York. I'm a lifelong New Yorker. So I know there's more TV stuff done here than perhaps movies. But immediately I started thinking, okay, what would be like a New York style thing or something set in New York? Is it automatically film noir? Is it something really gritty in the 70s and 80s? Or something like that? Or is it a high-tech New York future, like, you know, in the later episodes of Fringe, which I feel like you watch. So
yes.
Yeah. So, you know, is it like that? So hence my question of, you know, so I guess to rephrase then, you do see yourself potentially doing these non-Kentucky or non-Indiana, whether it be blends or focuses down the line, if the creative juices strike right.
Yeah, we always say one of our little sayings is, right, like we pick the liquid that best fits what's going on. So like a movie will go produce in the best location for that movie for lots of reasons, creativity, budget, scenery, whatever. We are going to produce on location for that particular liquid. So because of the taste or because of where it's from or its heritage or something like that. So yes, we will.
And there's also, I know you guys do most of the pilgrimage to Kentucky and that area, but you have visited the rum distillery in New Orleans. So it was another one where I was thinking.
We've been to plenty of other states, but the majority of them are obviously in Kentucky. But that was one of our very first distilleries, I think, was the rum distillery in New Orleans, right?
It's pretty early on, yeah.
We've rated Tennessee pretty heavily.
Tennessee, California, and Georgia, obviously, for obvious reasons. We've been to a ton of distilleries in both of those. But, you know, then it's sort of some random places as well.
I for some reason, when I heard the story about you guys visiting New Orleans, I just imagined a almost a Jordan Peele style trailer. You know, these one word movie titles and just rum. Like just running from something coming, right, you know. But I don't know. I'll take 5% on that. It's okay. So as you've gone into more markets, I mean, now I believe you're in 43 states or able to go to 43 states.
Well, we ship to 43 states. So the right. service we use that's because we can't sell to consumers directly ourselves, but the service we use can ship to 43 states. We are on shelves and back bars right now in 9 states, actually 8 technically. In about a month, it'll be 10. So we're going into 2 more states in the next 30 days or so, but we are in 8 states right now. We launched in Kansas in December. And then we just launched in other parts of Kansas in the last couple of weeks. So we're now all over, you know, pretty much the eastern part of the state. So Wichita, Topeka, Manhattan, Lawrence, Kansas City, obviously, and a few other places. And then we just launched in Colorado, so in the end of February. So we're just getting started there as well. And then, of course, we're in Kentucky, California, and then we're in Arizona, Nevada, Washington, and Alaska. And then we will be in select locations in Florida coming soon. Just really, honestly, I think we're just starting out in a few total wines there. And then we are going to be in about 30 or 40 stores in Illinois in the next month or so.
I mean, you're hitting big distribution center. I mean, maybe not Alaska as a distribution center, but you're hitting otherwise, you know, big population centers.
Right.
And I'm thinking too, as you're, I know the difference between being able to ship to 43 states and being on the back bars in 8 and soon to be 10 states is very different, because you can, on one hand, you have all that reach from being able to ship to the 43 states, but people have to hear about you first.
Right.
Whereas with the other ones, they can walk into a random liquor store, and if they have you on the shelf, they'll see it and might pick it up, or maybe they'll see it at the bar and say, hey, what's that bottle? So, so far in the, let's say, year and a half since you've been selling, what have you seen in terms of the audiences that have really picked up on your products, and who's drinking it and where especially?
It's been super gratifying, I should say, because we do a lot of, you know, aside from the Kentucky Bourbon Festival, where we've talked about the fact that we met thousands of people and tasted them on it. We get a lot of great response kind of everywhere. So as I mentioned, I spend a lot of time traveling around to all of our markets. I, in any state that allows it, I do tastings in stores, you know, where we give, you know, people come in and they can taste for free or whatever. I've done classes. I just got back from doing a couple of classes in Kansas City where I had about 40 people in each class, and they came in to taste, and I led them through the brand and that kind of thing. And there are certain things we hear all the time from people. It's fun to sit there and, like, I don't give away what I know they're about to say, and then they say it, like the adult cereal box or that kind of thing. But it's been super gratifying. So it's been kind of across the board. So I've met 22 and 23 year olds who love what we're doing. They're really into whiskey. They love, you know, they're into sci-fi and adventure and action and all that. They want our posters to hang in the living room walls. I've met with men and women in their 70s who, some into whiskey, some not. They love what we're doing, and makes them nostalgic for movies they watched when they were younger. And so they want it, and kind of everything in between. You know, it's obviously we have certain marketing dollars and we target, you know, certain groups or whatever, but we seem to appeal across a really wide range for different reasons to different people, which has been great. And the things I hear all the time, I'd say 90% of the time, people will taste Moonlight Mayhem, the bottle that you have there, and they'll go, wow, that's really good. And they'll start calling out notes of it's this, it's that, the other thing. And then I will immediately have them taste Moonlight Mayhem Extended Cut, which is our cast strength version of Moonlight Mayhem. So extended cut is our trademark term for cast strength. And then they will look at me and they go, ooh, that's great. Is that one higher proof or lower proof than the first one? So we have, you know, and then that leads to a whole conversation. So we've kind of got, and the same thing happens with Rise of the Robots and Rise of the Robots extended cut, our Rise. And so we've kind of started to develop this reputation as blenders who, you know, our high proof, our cast strength stuff, our higher proof stuff tends to drink like it's lower proof than our 94 proof stuff, right? It's just much more flavor forward. It's really flavor rich. And so the alcohol kind of recedes to the back. But I hear it like constantly from every age group and every demographic.
And to call out, you said the extended cut, you've compared it to deleted scenes. That's the cast strength version of the products.
Yes.
You've also got the remastered.
Coming soon,
which will be the finishes.
Yes.
And then single barrels, which do you have the first single barrels?
So we have single barrel store picks, which are based on Moonlight Mayhem extended cut. And so there's actually a store and a whiskey group in Kansas that just got theirs. There's Blind Pig down in Bardstown has a single barrel. John O's in E-Town in Kentucky, they did a single barrel along with Give 270, like split that barrel with them, and they have their own label on it. I know we have a couple of others coming as well, but that's based on Moonlight Mayhem extended cut. if and when we put out our own single barrel, then it will be referred to as producer's cut.
Gotcha. That's a note that I had was for the producer's cut, but I didn't want to make, you know, didn't want to confuse the two. So
yeah.
With the store picks, though, if I heard this correctly, the store picks that have been done or the group picks that have been done so far have been able to have their own names or slightly different names?
No. So the product is Moonlight Mayhem Extended Cut, the one with the purple label.
Right.
It's still that the bottom information on the label changes a little bit because it has to be generic for all the picks. But then what they get is across the bottom, they get a it's technically a sticker, but it's meant to look like the trophy plate from an Oscar or something. And it's got like a metal texture and sheen to it. So it almost looks like a piece of metal riveted onto the bottle. And so their logo and handpicked by and the proof and everything will go on that label.
Gotcha.
Maybe what David's referring to, or if he's not, just to kind of give a peek behind the curtain, is when we taste single barrels and identify standout barrels for our single barrel program, we give them nicknames. So that are all, you know, like movie related. So, you know, like if it goes to a, you know, if a store is looking at the available barrels that we've highlighted, you know, like when we're tasting all those, you know, all those barrels that Troy mentioned earlier, when we're doing tastings, we'll set aside ones that we think are really standouts. And based on the tasting notes, we try to give them little nicknames that are, that kind of lead into, you know, like hint at what the tasting notes are without being leading or anything like that. So I'm going to blank on some of the names of like some recent barrels.
And we should caveat, these are not names we actually put on the labels.
They're other
people's trademarks. We just use them internally for fun. And we talk to the stores about them. It just, instead of saying to the store, well, which samples do you want? And they have to say, well, give me barrel number 4293. Or they can say, give me Honey, I Shrunk the Bourbon. Or give me Charlie and the Chocolate Distillery, or give me America's Sweetheart, or Hot Tamales, you know, that kind of thing, which all tell you a little bit. They all have to do with the movies, and they all tell you a little bit about what it might, you know, we believe the tasting notes are for those barrels.
I think that's, Charlie, you caught it. That was what I had heard of, was the nicknames, I think. And I was confusing that with the, you know, having a bottle name, let's say.
Yeah, those don't end up going on the barrel because, like Troy said, if nothing else, they're trademarked.
Exactly.
They're just kind of internal nicknames that we create to make it a little bit different than, you know, Barrel 6 is not nearly as sexy as like Honey, I Shrunk the Bourbon. Yeah.
Yeah. Little generic, little scientific. So I think I know the answer to this question, but it seems like while you do both still enjoy writing and screenwriting as a skill, it's no longer the full-time or even part-time vocation at this point. Like, this is the vocation.
Yes. Yeah. We're a whiskey company. We're focused on making whiskey. We're not making movies. You know, we're the only writing we do is, when it comes to business, is Filmland, right? We write for Filmland.
And I think this goes along with it, and based on your answer, but it seems like that satisfies the itch too. Like, you still get to do all those things that it sounds like you loved doing on the screenwriting side, on the storyboarding side, but paired, Troy, as you said, from that initial interview with the love of whiskey.
Yes. One of the reasons I stopped trying to be a professional screenwriter was I love writing, and I'm great at, you know, I'm fine with taking notes and I'm good at taking notes and processing things, but it was taking the enjoyment out of it to take a lot of notes from people who were motivated by a lot of other things besides the quality of the writing, right? And making a better story. And I realized I don't want to make a living that way. I'd rather write for myself or for whatever. And with Filmland, right? We only have to take notes from each other, right? And our marketing, our head of marketing and our head of sales, but, you know, we have a lot of creative, we have all the creative freedom and all the creative integrity we want out of it. So to me, it is extremely satisfying from a creative standpoint. Charlie, I don't know about you.
I would say that your notes have made me cry far more often than like the notes I ever got writing from somebody else. But that, That's a whole different point. No, I would say, you know, like another a very related point is I literally have drawers filled with printouts of screenplays that I worked on that never saw the light of day, or a hard drive that's half full of, like, you know, really, I really liked it, but stuff that never saw the light of day, right? Here, when we write something, it goes on the label. It becomes a product. It gets seen by an audience. It gets drunk by an audience. So, you know, like, we're writing for ourselves, but we're also writing for, you know, for a receptive audience. And so it is gratifying to not just write it and then, you know, like, come up with an idea and never have the world get to experience it. You know, in this case, we come up with an idea, we work on it, you know, it becomes a thing, right? It, you know, it's a movie concept wrapped together with, like, really great bourbon. So, or rye. So yeah, it's, you know, in this particular case, it's gratifying in the sense that we get the creative output and it also finds an audience at the same time and a receptive audience for that.
Right. And it's also all over our social media. At Filmland Spirits on Instagram, Facebook, and it's
also gonna be my next question. So, yeah.
and it's also all over our website at filmlandspirits.com, where, you know, we get to work on our own trailers and we write the script pages that we then create storyboards to connect to, and they're interactive, and, you know, that's all there. So that's all part of the creative process and all part of you know, our chance to get it out to the world. And I love telling the stories. You know, I don't always get the chance, but when I'm, you know, out pitching stores or holding tastings for consumers, sometimes there's time. And so I can tell them the synopsis of the different movies. And I love standing there watching people's faces as I'm telling and seeing their reactions from it.
And that's how I got to know you guys at the KBF, was hearing those stories told. So with that, I'll move on to my, with the last question, which is going back to that tease of that's happening later this year, and especially in 25, if there is anything that you could tell us.
Yeah, so there will be a release in the fall. We're hoping to time it around Kentucky Bourbon Festival again. Not saying what it is yet, but I think people will like it. and it'll be somewhat familiar. And then we are hoping to, and really working towards a cadence of, you know, Moonlight Mayhem, and Moonlight Mayhem Extended Cut, Rise of the Robots Extended Cut. Those are our core offerings. They're meant to always be available. In the spring each year, we're going to try and do some kind of limited release, typically probably our remastered series, a finished product. In the fall, it'll be something unique or aged or something kind of, you know, different about it in that regard, maybe some kind of funky blend or whatever it is. And those will be more limited. They'll come and go. You know, we might come again the next year with the same thing and a variation of it, or it'll disappear for a couple of years as we play with other things. But that's the cadence we're going to try and meet.
I'm sorry. I actually had one other question that I forgot to ask you that I cannot not ask, let's say, which is, and it was meant to be around when I asked, you know, do you have stories and liquid that haven't matched up yet? And, it was this question of knowing movies as well as you both do, knowing what goes into them, the background. I heard one of you say that it kind of ruins movies for you sometimes, or spoils movies for you sometimes, knowing all the stuff that goes on the back end. But within this canon of B movie and horror, sci-fi, all these different things, do you think that in a general sense, every story can find a liquid, and every liquid can find a story?
I think in a general sense, yes. I certainly think we can find a story for every liquid. There's no question about that. We probably have some stories that we'll never use because one reason or another, but I don't think it's because they can't find a liquid necessarily. I mean, I guess that could happen, but just because they may not make sense from the full package standpoint.
Because I'm very much in a mode of what I know, and that's all I know. So I'm like, what kind of liquid could you make from a mummy inspiration, or if you wanted to go the Doctor Who route of not just the time travel, but the really intricacies of sometimes when they get so convoluted that you can't really almost follow the storyline anymore. And also because you mentioned earlier that Moonlight Mayhem went with the werewolf theme because there was a different element originally that you ended up not being able to use. So, I mean, I have to kind of guess vampire, but that's just me. But that's what the way I was thinking about that. It was just like, are there concepts that you don't think that you can use as well?
Oh, yeah. I think Charlie's dog is barking. So, yes, because, you know, we brainstorm and come up with a ton of ideas. When we start getting serious about one of them, meaning when we think we might use this, then we go into like overdrive in terms of checking, making sure there are no other products on the market, making sure it's not going to violate anybody's trademark and that we can get the trademark on it. And then, you know, there's consideration. We, like I said, we get our marketing, head of marketing involved and look at it from all of the marketing standpoint. And then same thing with sales. And then we test the idea out on people we know, friends and family, to see how they react with it. And then we go into a mode where it usually starts with, I'll go into Photoshop and just start mocking stuff up of what the poster might look like. And then I'll typically, just like we did this morning, I'll bring it to Charlie first, and then I'll get all his ideas, and then I'll redo it. And then we'll bring, you know, once he and I are kind of thinking we got something pretty good, we'll bring it to the rest of the team. And then the rest of the team will give us all kinds of notes, and we'll go back to the drawing board, and we'll probably create 30 versions of that before we settle on what we like. And then we will go get one of our artists that we bring in to recreate the whole thing from scratch. So not every idea can make it through all those steps and all those processes. Things will fall out for one reason or another in that process.
Yes, if you're going through 30 iterations, only the best are going to make it through.
That's the idea. Yeah,
exactly. So with that, you know, Charlie, Troy, I want to thank you both for coming on, chatting with me about the creative process in particular. I know we didn't spend a ton of time on the liquid itself, and that's mainly because I think there's so much about the background of it that you have to, you don't have to, but that increases your appreciation of what you guys are doing if you know what you're looking at when you find a bottle. So thank you both for coming on. There will, of course, be links to not only the all your social media accounts in the show notes for this episode, as well as the website where you can buy bottles, an upcoming store locator that, if it's not on the website now, I know will be coming very shortly.
It is. It's on the website. It is on the website. Yes.
Okay. So store locator. So you'll be able to find it locally, or if you're in one of those 43 states, or if you're in one of those other 7 states and know someone in those other 43 states that you have a friend, where you can find bottles of all the releases so far. Charlie and Troy, hang on with me for just a sec after recording. And this has been another episode of the Whiskering Podcast. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next week.
Hey folks, thanks for listening to another episode of the Whiskering Podcast. If you like what you hear, please go ahead and click that subscribe, follow, or like button. Leave a rating and review on your podcast app of choice, and let me know what you want to hear. You can reach out to me through the podcast apps, or email me at david@whiskeymyweddingring.com with any suggestions or ideas for new show guests. You can also support the podcast at patreon.com/whiskeyinmyweddingring. That's whiskey with an E, for as little as $1 a month. $5 a month gets you access to bonus content, including our soon-to-resume Under the Influencer series, and $25 a month means you join the Barrel Share Club. Each month, Barrel Share Club members get to try products sent to me for review, bottles from my own collection, and sometimes bottles that I just pick up because they're fun or interesting. Right now, only 5 spots remain in the Barrel Share Club, so grab your place today. Finally, please follow on Instagram. You can follow me at @whiskeymyweddingring or at @whiskeringpodcast. You can follow me on Twitter at @whiskering. You can follow on Facebook at @whiskeymyweddingring or join the Facebook group, the Whiskey Ringers group. And I hope to see you there. Cheers. Thanks for the support, and see you next time.